me, Jay, it ain't country if it don't come from Nashville. Better hit up LA and get yourself a good rap deal. Spit with the best, just don't get your cap here. But I'm from the Wild West with real women and fast steel. It's in my veins, I'ma stick to my guns. Man, I live this all day, lyrics hot as the sun. And don't play your music, but it ain't gonna work though. Nobody wants to hear about them woods and the dirt.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. And welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of August, and we've just, or the second day into our new schedule. For those of you that are just tuning in, well, if you're just tuning in, I guess it doesn't matter because the new schedule's new to you already. But We've been on 5 days a week for several years, and we've trimmed that back a little bit now. More time per day, just less days. So we're actually on 7 hours a week instead of six, but we're doing it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday now. And today being Wednesday, the second half of the show is Gun Talk, and Doc Toops is going to be in here with me on the at the top of the second hour. And we're going to talk about a some handgun disarming techniques. We have quite a show lined up for you, so hopefully it'll do you some good. It'll be entertaining or interesting for you at any rate. So there's a couple of videos that I want to play for you. Obviously, you're not going to be able to watch them with me, but you can listen to them, and that's the important thing. One of them is a representative or a congressman named Tim Walberg got into it with Chris Ann Hall about he's out of Michigan, Republican nevertheless, or no less, out of Michigan, got into it with Chris Ann Hall, and that is a very poor choice, very poor adversary to argue about the Constitution with. And we'll talk about this a little bit after you listen to this. You're going to need to turn your sound up because this is not a, you know, it's a cell phone video from close by. Sound is okay as far as it's clear enough, but it's very low. So turn it up and listen. And it is, I forgot how long it is, but when I turn it off, you'll probably want to turn your sound back down before I don't start talking, so I don't blow your ears out here. So I want you to listen to this. I'm going to start it right now, so go ahead and turn it up and see what you think about this guy's argument here. 5 minutes long.
We can now equivocate because you have to vote.
You can just simply say.
And isn't that what I said? You don't know how it really is.
Everything you said tonight, I agree with you, and things I've said about the state legislature being the most powerful legislative branch, and they ought to take that again. I've said that what Scalia said to me, that the most powerful Supreme Court ought to be the state Supreme Court, not the federal Supreme Court.
It doesn't matter, but the spending is in your hands. It is in the House alone.
We've done it.
Okay, so why are you funding the EPA?
Why are we funding the EPA?
Yes, because they're unconstitutional.
Well, bottom line, the president
has Homeland Security
already.
No. The
he does.
So take it away.
The people have said.
So defund it.
Okay, how do you do that?
Madison said you alone can.
How did it work? How did it work when we defunded? When we shut government down in 2013,
okay.
What happened?
You saw
what were you saying on your radio station?
You
pontificating and posturing perfection. Perfection. How were you pontificating on that when the government was shut down and the only ones defending your freedoms were losing points?
See, here's
to your
the,
people
so
that you can educate by one
you're, program. You're equivocating based on morality. You're asking me to allow you to be immoral and to spend on things that are not constitutional. I will never give you permission to be immoral. It is immoral to fund the EPA. Because it is not a constitutional authority.
We have the authority to fund anything we want to.
Oh, my
by the
goodness.
Vote of the people.
No, you do not.
By the vote of the
you
people.
You only have the authority to fund things that have been delegated to the United States
I agree
government
with you on
through
that.
The Constitution.
But you don't
so
have,
then how can you,
you
fund anything?
You don't have 218 members in the House.
Oh, because now we're equivocating. We're a democracy based on majority vote in the House now. Is that how that works?
Well,
now, the, oh, so you're telling me that the House of Representatives, so the House of Representatives can amend the Constitution by a vote. Is that what you're telling me?
By the vote of the people putting Congress in office.
So I'm sorry, that is unconstitutional because the
that's
only way
people go to Congress.
Is the only
by vote of people.
Article 5 is
you're
the
not
only
win
way.
On this one.
The only way.
You're not going to win on this one.
Well, of course not, because
of
you refuse
not.
To see the truth.
You refuse to see the truth of the Constitution.
No. The Constitution says
I've
you
got to
alone.
We're not going to get into this.
You just told these people that you can vote for anything to fund.
No,
anything.
I didn't say that.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't
check
say that.
Check the tape. He
check
said
that.
You can vote
I said Congress
anything.
Can vote anything in that they want to.
Uh-huh.
And I may not agree with it. And
no,
I vote against it.
So what is the limit of Congress if they can
your
vote
your semantics
anything?
Are accurate in semantics, but in reality, I deal with
see,
the Congress.
See, once again, we're dealing with the Congress amending the Constitution.
Listen to what I said. I agree with everything she said,
right,
except in practical function in the Congress we have now that she's let become Congress, it doesn't work that way.
So you admit that Congress has violated the Constitution by its own choice, and it is completely unlimited by
vote. I agree that Congress has violated over years.
But you're telling us that they
have
the authority to vote and change the Constitution.
They have the authority given by the people.
No. The people do not have authority to allow you to vote changes in the Constitution. That's why we have Article 5.
Listen, thank you for coming.
You have no right to fund the EPA.
You have no right to come here and say that without even knowing my voting record.
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because you could care less.
Did you vote to fund the EPA?
Number one most conservative member in Michigan Delegation 30.
Did you vote to fund the EPA?
I did not.
So you did not vote for the last budget?
I did not.
You voted against the last budget?
We didn't have a budget. We have not passed the budget.
Which is also unconstitutional.
If you were watching.
Which is also
unconstitutional. But it takes 218 votes to pass it, Chris Ann.
Because you're not operating constitutionally.
Hey, listen.
You just told
love
us.
Love your life.
You just told us that Congress can vote for anything. See, that is the problem. When we have people elected in Congress who say they have no limits on their authority. He looked at us and said, Congress by 218 votes can vote anything. Anything. And we wonder why. We wonder why this government is completely out of control. Because we got people like that who tell you, oh, it practically doesn't work that way. This is the Constitution, but you don't understand reality, Chris Ann. That's the problem, and that's why the federal government is completely and totally broken. When you got people who are rated so high on the Constitution, who can look us in the face and say, guess what? By 218, we can change the Constitution. That is sick.
Thank you, Chris.
Chris Ann Hall is one that you don't want to rile up too much. She's pretty damn tough, and she's knowledgeable, extremely knowledgeable, and she can rattle this stuff off the top of her head without any notes, without any prompting, without any anything, and argue with about any facet of the Constitution that you want. But so this guy says that he agrees with what she's doing. She's telling the truth. But it's not reality. I'm not sure exactly how that works. It's what she's telling is the truth. Now he doesn't agree with James Madison. He doesn't agree with he's saying that you can vote, they can vote anything they want, change anything they want to. He said that at the beginning and then said he didn't say it when it's right there on the tape. Well, this has caused caused LFA to put out a very detailed press release on this, along with all the contact information to call this guy's office. Now, that is the epitome right there of a rhino, of a Republican in name only. He wouldn't let her talk. He kept talking over her, and every time she would try to get a foothold there, and he realized it, he would break in and talk over her again, so that he would always be right. He is the absolute. He's exactly what any other liberal is. He is most assuredly a rhino. He can say anything he wants, and he'll win every argument because he won't allow anybody else to talk. But Chris Ann would have none of it. She is one that will, she's a tough gal, I'll tell you what. She ain't very big. She ain't very big at all. She's about 4 foot nothing or something like that. Now she ain't quite that short, but she's pretty short. But she is, she's about 7 foot tall. When she gets to arguing with you about the Constitution, she will definitely put you down. And she'll start out pretty diplomatically and try to make you understand when you talk over and try to, it's not, you know, she can agree to disagree, to a point. I mean, she won't grab you by the hair of the head and slam your face into the floor if you don't agree with her. But when you just start just lying and telling things the way this guy was, she won't let you get a breath. But, anyway, the idea of this whole tape here was to let people see for themselves what some of your representatives, the people that are supposed to be representing us, and we give them the authority to do certain things, and that's all. You know, the whole thing could have been nipped in the bud right there when, if he would just understand that he does, his power comes from the consent of the governed, of us, from us. But he missed that class. He was probably gone that day when they talked about that in school. But there's another one here. Now, there's another gal that's just about like Chris Ann Hall. Wait. I don't want you to start talking yet. She is a whole lot like Chris Ann Hall. I said stop. Thank you. She's about the same size. Not very tall at all. But I want you to note this gal right here is full of fire. She is... She puts up with no crap from anybody, regardless of size, regardless of numbers. She is definitely a fighter. So is Chris Ann. They're two peas in a pod. Those two will get together and argue once in a while, and boy, the sparks will fly then. But it's interesting. So I want you to listen to this one. This is on a different subject, kind of. It is still based in corruption and the government, you know. So listen, this is Michelle Fiore out of Nevada, assemblywoman out of Nevada, and she's going to light you up here.
Hello, I'm Assemblywoman Michelle Fiore. Thank you for tuning in to this very important information. The information I'm about to share with you is on the authority from unnamed official sources. These sources are my personal sources, which include a few selected elected people, elected officials, judges, sitting FBI agents, as well as a handful of my personal Las Vegas Metro police friends. One of the lead FBI agents working with the prosecutor in the Bundy case revealed their plans to my unnamed official source Friday, July 29, 2016. According to the FBI agent, the FBI doesn't have anything on the Bundys. They don't have an actual evidence to prosecute the Bundys or anyone here in Nevada for the Bundy family standing up and defending their livelihood. The main reason the judge has sealed the evidence is because there is none. The only evidence they have is Facebook. This is the Nevada Facebook case, and there is no actual evidence of a crime committed here in Nevada. The FBI's strategic plan is to drag the trial out as long as possible so they can work on breaking the cowboy spirits, forcing them to take a deal and agree to a plea bargain. Unfortunately, the sad truth is, our American homemade FBI agency is actually terrorizing these American patriots with lies and threatening them by trying to make them believe they'll serve 100 plus years in prison. One of the agents told Joe O'Shaughnessy that unless he cooperates with them, he'll never see his 80-year-old mother alive again. There are a couple of men that stood with the Bundys that are incarcerated that actually have something in their past, but don't we all? However, the actions of the FBI are coercing the cowboy prisoners to flip and actually make lies up to turn on the Bundys with promises of getting their personal situation situated. The FBI is arresting more people and putting pressure on them to make them flip on the Bundys. Unfortunately, I've seen it all too often. Human nature forces one to say what the threatening agents want to hear to save their own skin. These suppressive agents make people believe they're in trouble, meanwhile they're not in trouble. However, when you have an authoritarian agent terrorizing you and trained to do so, one can become traumatized and cooperate, believing that's the only way out. All this so a few evil men can save face. And shamefully, our judicial system here in Nevada is backing this corrupt case up. Let's recap. The FBI has no actual evidence. They're holding American cowboys hostage in jails, hoping to break them into submission. They've sealed evidence from the press and the American people. They are frightening innocent men to take plea bargains and coercing them, the men with flawed records, to turn on their fellow Americans with lies. They're using these men's family as their bargaining chip. Now let me ask you, if you were taken from your family, incarcerated for more than 6 months, not able to go to work to buy food for your family or pay the rent or mortgage, your wife and children are now homeless, would you take a bargain just to get out to fix your family that the government has broken? I can't blame good men for breaking because their wives, children, and parents need them. Most of these men are the head of their household. And what many people don't understand is that when a family member is incarcerated, it's truly a shared sentence. Where did our ethics go in our justice system? Can the judge empathize? What if this was him or her or one of their family members? How have so many become calloused when it comes to your neighbor's freedom? What most Americans don't realize is our prison facilities are mostly private corporations. It's a billion-dollar industry, and they write elected officials, judges, and the heads of police departments big checks to fill their prisons. Tune in for our next message on NewsmaxTV.Vegas for the facts on prisons for...
All right, there you go. I know Michelle and Chris Ann both fairly well. Chris Ann better than Michelle. And I can tell you that they're amazing women to listen to and to watch in action. But, you know, we've all talked about the guys that have broken and taken plea bargains in order to get out of jail, get a reduced sentence in return for turning turning state's evidence on some of the other people in jail. And we can talk all the crap we want to. I don't think there's not many of us that know just exactly what we would do in that position. We can sit here in our lazy boy listening to the show on the laptop or watching TV or whatever and tell everybody how you would never do that. Most of us don't know whether we would do that or not. When you're, especially those with younger children. Now, there's several of the Bundy men in there, and almost all of them, except Cliven, have younger children. But the difference is that whole family understands liberty, and they understand, they have a firm belief in their religion and in their hearts that they will be with their family again, regardless of what happens or how long it takes. Whether it's in this life or the next, they know that they will. And I don't believe that any of the Bundys will break. I'm confident of that. Several of these other people have broken. And I'm really surprised at a couple of them, because I know a couple of them don't have anything other than their own personal safety and convenience at risk. You know, no families, no, not married, no dependents, no nothing. And they are, I know at least one that has broken, and I don't understand why. But as Michelle said, these people are highly trained to break people without even starting the waterboarding and everything else. I mean, they're trained to do it psychologically before any of this other stuff ever even starts. And most of us are not hardened enough to remotely be able to withstand what they put them through. I'm disappointed, very surprised that some of them have turned, especially this early. But I wasn't there. I'm not in the jail, so I didn't spend 4 or 5 months in solitary confinement. I can't tell you, I can tell you what I think I would do, but I can't tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is what Cope Reynolds would do put in that same situation. I have kids. I have a wife that I love. I have material things that I like to mess with, you know, go out in the woods and play and do things, and I can't tell you what I'd do. You know, there's a lot of people that have faith in me, and they tell me what they think I would do. But if I don't know what I would do, how would anybody else know? But what bothers me worse than anything about this is the fact that this whole refuge thing. Let's back up just a little bit. This whole refuge deal has nothing to do with the refuge. It has nothing to do with taking over a federal building. It has nothing to do with guns in a federal building. It has nothing to do with anything. This whole thing is 10,000% about Bundy Ranch. It is retaliation for the humiliation that the feds faced when they were backed down in front of the world. It has nothing to do with the refuge. Are any of the people from Burns in jail? Are any of the people that were involved in several of the things that happened around there, where they were from Burns or not, any of those in jail? No. Every one of them had something to do with Bundy Ranch. So it's retaliation. They don't have any evidence. They don't have evidence of what happened at Bundy Ranch. They can't really get them for anything at the refuge. Now they have got a couple of people that have turned on everybody else and had them to say that yes, they intimidated employees and kept them from coming back to their jobs, which they did not. They can't, having guns in a federal building is not illegal when there are not federal employees present. The statute is very clear. It specifically says buildings owned and operated by the federal government when there are employees present. There were no employees in that building. They can't get them for weapons, period. They will, but not legally. They'll use that, or they'll try to use it. But anyway, this whole thing is driving me nuts here. And there's one other point I want to make before we move on to something else, and I'll do that here in just a minute.
Strong winds that blow lonely, seven seas that run high, all these things that won't change come what may. But my good times are all gone, and I'm bound for moving on. I'll look for you if I'm ever back this way. Weather's good there in the fall. Got some friends that I could go to working for. Still, I wish you'd change your mind if I ask you one more time. But we've been through that 100 times or more. Thank you.
snow flies and things are going good. You could join me if I'd send you down the fair. But if you wait until it's when, it would do no good. For the wind sure can blow cold way out there. Four strong winds, that's so lonely. Seven seas that run high. All these things that won't change, come what
change, come what may.
But my good times are all gone, and I'm bound for moving on. I'll look for you if I'm ever back this way.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. All right, we're back. I got some other things I want to get into, but one more point that I want to make, and I understand, I know what everybody's going to put in the chat room, I know what everybody's going to say. But it still bothers me that these people will spend that much money and that much time and ruin entire families and careers to produce, to invent criminals. Joe Robertson, the guy in Wyoming that had the little, Joe Robertson was another one, but they had the other guy in Wyoming that built the pond on his property. We have people that catch in rainwater, people that were selling milk, selling fresh milk. Had a guy in Kansas that was charged, I don't remember what it was, $1.5 million or something, for selling more than five... has something to do with selling rabbits, anyway. They're creating criminals. You cannot go day to day without committing a crime, and many of them are felonies, and you don't even know it. And that's what bothers me, is we have people in the United States government. I understand all about power and fear and all that, but it still is hard for me to believe that there are enough people. Maybe I should rephrase that. Maybe I should say it's hard for me to believe that there are not enough people, good people, honest people in the federal government at all levels, city, county, state, federal, that there are not enough good people to do something about this. That there's not enough good legislators to see what's happening and or be told. You know, a lot of these legislators probably don't know what's happening. They don't watch the news, you know, and nothing of it. But I know that there are people alerting these legislators, informing them of what's going on. And there are very few of them that's doing anything. There's very, very few, very, very freaking few legislators on the Hill that have the testicular fortitude that Chris Ann Hall and Michelle Fiore have. Matter of fact, I'm gonna look here real quick and see if I can. See if I can find something for you. I want you to listen to another I just thought about this right now. Let's see if I can find this one real quick for you. Another one of that Michelle did. Let's see here. I may have to find it during the next break or something here. But give me just a second. I want to look one more time before I give it away here. She's, like I said, she's definitely no nonsense. She's fun to watch. Well, anyway, there's one of these where she's sitting in a meeting. Excuse me. Sitting in a meeting at the Capitol building, I suppose, in Nevada or somewhere. Anyway, she tells this guy right in front of God and everybody, sit down and shut up. And she wasn't kidding. She told him no uncertain terms. She laid it out there. I wish I could find it real quick. But anyway, I'll find it for you some other time. Anyway. All right. Well, I wanted to move on to some other stuff anyway. I still got a few things I want to cover before Doc comes in at the top of the hour. And I'll be in Tucson this weekend. I've got a class. Actually, I'm doing three classes down there. In Tucson, and then next weekend I'll be in New Mexico doing a class, and the following weekend I'll be here with a rifle class, and I think if nothing else changes that I'm going to have the last weekend in August off where I can do something else. So I'm planning on taking that one. I am definitely taking Labor Day weekend off. And then we start all over again. So, got a lot of stuff. There will be some classes coming up in Snowflake here real soon. Probably in September. Almost certainly in September. So, watch our website for that. And, Radio Doc said they tried to get Sheriff to deputize their code enforcement officer. You know, up in, when Lavoie was still alive, the feds tried to get the Mojave County Sheriff to deputize them so that they could do that. And thankfully, the sheriff didn't do it. He saw it through. The sheriff up there is not that strong. He's not that great. But he was great enough to not deputize these feds. He understands the law. He is not what I would call a constitutional sheriff, but he's a pretty good sheriff. Speaking of constitutional sheriffs, next Wednesday, a week from tonight, we will dedicate the entire show to a constitutional sheriff candidate. And I think that all of you will be pleased and interested in this show. This guy is, I'm not going to tell you too awful much about him. But he is an amazing candidate, and he will make an amazing Navajo County Sheriff. There's no question about it. So. All right, let me get off of that here. I just got, well, I can't do that right now. Let's start with this one. Totally different subject here. A lot of you have heard that there's different black organizations out there and individuals that are talking about reparations. They're talking about getting paid, getting financial compensation for their ancestors being worked as slaves, 150 years ago or whatever it was. Well, there's a gal here called Natasha Marin. She started this this group, this concept of reparations. She's an artist, does quite a few different things. But reparations started out as a Facebook page just 2 weeks ago. And she said, now I'm going to read to you what she, I'm not going to add anything to it. I want you to just hear what she says here. She said, what if you actually did something meaningful for someone before the end of the year? What if a stranger restored your belief in humanity, if only for a moment, by supporting you and allowing you to claim something you need in a material way? I invite people of color to ask for what we need to feel better, be happier, be more productive by posting in this space. These may be both material and immaterial requests. I invite people who identify as white. When I read this the first time, I got to this point, that's when I got pissed off. I invite people who identify as white to offer services or contributions to people of color in time of need, in people of color in need of time, energy, substantive care, and support. She said, I don't want to put limitations on this social experiment, but here's how I imagine this might work. Here, <she's, laughs> this is how she imagines this might work. Person of color one. This is a theoretical thing. She's imagining how this might work. I need a massage this week. White person one, post Groupon with code for redemption. Person of color two, I need therapy. I can spend $10 a session. White person two, post contact information to a therapist who they have made arrangements with. Person of color three, I need groceries. White person three, I'll get them for you. PM me and I'll send an Amazon Fresh or Safeway delivery. I'll send an Amazon Fresh or Safeway delivery. You just pick out what you want. I have a $200 limit. Person of color four, I'm too upset to make dinner. I live in Seattle. White person four, come over to my house for dinner. Bring a friend if you like. PM me and I'll send you the address. Or can I order delivery for you? What kind of food do you like? Please. Person of color five, I need a quiet place to work on blank. White person five, I have an office, spare room, house that will be unoccupied on the following dates. Would you like to use that space? I can send pictures. Person of color six, I want to scream and cuss at someone. White person six, I volunteer as tribute. How do we set this up? Person of color seven, I want to escape this cruel world in a specific video game, but can't afford it on Steam right now. This is not a crisis. I just don't trust people easily and want to see if this works. White person seven, thank you for giving me the chance to do something concrete and relatively easy. I was quietly hating myself for doing nothing. The next thing here is want to contribute? Use the donate button for quick and easy assistance. You know, the only reason I still have this phone in my hand and it didn't wind up in a lake about 3 or 4 days ago when I found this is because it cost $600 and I didn't want to throw it away, but I exercised a tremendous degree of discipline and self-discipline there by not throwing that in the river.
Come. Well, raccoons trying to get on our back porch, Mom, if you chase them off with a broom.
So I'll let y'all ponder on that one a little bit, and we'll move on. That one ticks me off so bad it's hard to move on here. Did you see where the Olympic torch was stolen and extinguished in a river in Brazil? The rioters stole the torch for the first time in the history of the Olympics. And put it out in the river. I don't know where I would like to go with the discussion on this, but I guess it's just a matter of... I don't know. It just stuff like that just makes me so furious. I can't see straight. We have lost not just in our country, worldwide. We have lost the values. Just human, basic human values. It's becoming increasingly difficult to find people. That Doc's got a good point. It was a revolutionary blow against global warming. You know, every year, every 4 years or 2 years or whatever in the hell it is, they light this torch for no good reason other than to run around and run up these stairs and light some big pot on fire with it. And that does contribute to global warming. And I'm sure that is probably why these people stole it and put it out. But it's getting increasingly difficult to find people that are, just find good people. That's why Amy has the only show on the Survival Circle Network that is good news. We've said time and time again, there's just not enough to go around for everybody. But if you want to find end of the world stuff, disasters, murder, rape, rob, pillage, corruption, and all that. Yeah, there's plenty for all of us. Oh yeah, we have no shortage of that. You know, I went today to do a deal for some insurance, and it was at a person's house, and. After, that's right, Yakima Glock, people have no respect anymore, and it's no wonder when you see some of the video games and stuff on television and the books you read, the music they listen to, people they hang out with, even some of the churches. I mean, that can be confirmed by the two prayers that we listened to a couple days ago. I think we'd listen to those Monday. The prayer at the Republican National Convention and the whatever it was at the Democratic National Convention, it wasn't nearly a prayer. It didn't resemble a prayer in any remote stretch of the imagination. But anyway, I was telling you about this person we went and seen for the insurance stuff, Amy and I both. Well, it was all over with, and we were beginning to leave. We'd kind of made friends with her while we were talking there, and didn't talk about anything in particular. But she was going. We had to weigh, get on the scales and everything. So I told her, when I get up there dressed like I am, subtract 14 pounds from what it says, and that'll be my naked weight. She said, well, I can't do that. So, if you want to take anything out of your pockets or, whatever, do it before you step up there because I've signed my life away saying that I will write down exactly what it says out there. I said, all right. So I took my gun, two magazines, three knives, flashlight, and cell phone, all that stuff and laid it on the counter there. And Amy did the same thing. So when we got all done, she finished her official business, and we got finished and got ready to leave. She said, since we're done, since it's over with and I can do this without getting in trouble, I'd like to ask you guys a question, if you don't mind. I said, sure, we're not in any big hurry. So we sat back down in a different, I can't think what the word is. And she said, "What? I noticed you guys are gun toters and all that, and I can tell by your truck. You know, there's everything about you kind of makes me believe that you are how did she put it on there? She said conservative or something, but anyway." What she was alluding to there is disaster preparedness, end of the world stuff, you know, Jade Helm. I mean, she was full of questions. And bless her heart, she gets it. She understands. She's got a, I was really, really enjoyable to visit with her a little bit. And, through her, we may wind up doing, one or more classes over in the Snowflake Taylor area next month. So, anyway, pretty interesting. She had a lot of good common sense questions, and we spent probably the better part of probably a good half hour visiting with her about this stuff. So, okay, let's move on here. Some of this stuff, gun-related stuff, I want to save. There's a good article. It was in, it's in several places, but I got it from Readout News. If you guys are Facebookers, you should, you don't even have to be a Facebooker. You can just go to the, get on their email list. Go to Readout News. Readout being R-E-D-O-U-B-T, not readout like a computer readout or something. Readout News. And there's a story here. A guy wrote about, says there was, this was John Whitehead. John Whitehead, if you remember, we've talked about him a time or two over the years. He is with the, what the heck is it? The, I'll think of it in a minute, say, Constitutional, dang it, what is it? The Rutherford Institute. And he's pretty knowledgeable, and I enjoy reading his stuff. I'm not sure that I agree with him 100% what he's saying here, but I do agree very much with the concept and the possibility of it, the potential of it. And I think that's all he's getting at here. I don't think he really believes what he's saying so firmly here. I think he's putting it out as an idea of something that could happen. But he starts out with a quote from James Madison that says, "A standing military force with an overgrown executive will not long be safe companions to liberty." And what he's talking about, he says there will be no second American Revolution. He's talking about the futility of an armed revolt. And the whole story, what it's based on mostly is, you know, the government being prepared for an armed uprising and all this stuff. And we all get that. We understand that they've been preparing for that for some time. And we also understand that it will be tough if that were to ever happen. But what he's basing this mostly on are the people that sit around on their ass on Facebook and on making YouTube videos and pounding their chest and saying how bad they're gonna mess somebody up, you know, when the time comes, and he's saying that they're not gonna do it. It's not gonna happen. And I have to agree with him. I have to say that there's nothing to indicate to me that we have nearly the participation that it's going to require to be effective in any manner against the federal government. Will it ever come to that? I don't know, possibly. I mean, there's always that possibility. Well, anyway, Doc's going to come on here in just a minute. We're going to take about a 5-minute break or so here, and we'll get Doc on here with us, and we've got another deal we want to talk about. Now, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start this break. I'm going to make the break a little longer than normal because I'm going to put two videos in there, and you should be able to watch them both in about five and a half minutes or something like that. And I'd like for you, if you're in the chat room, I'd like for you to watch them both. And for those of you not in the chat room, we'll explain them to you when we come back. But I want you to watch these videos. Keep in mind what the guy is doing. Watch him closely. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Come on. Thanks, Ronnie.
Thumb away from L.A. back to Knoxville. I found out those bright lights ain't where I belong. From a phone booth in the rain, I called to tell her. I've had a change of dreams, I'm coming home. But tears fill my eyes when I found she was gone. Smoky Mountain Range keeps on calling. I keep on calling her name. Smoky Mountain Range, I'll keep on searching. I can't go on hurting this way. Said that he was going as far as Gatlinburg. I climbed up in the cab all wet and cold and lonely. I wiped my eyes and told him about her. I've got to find her. Can you make these big wheels burn? For letting go, a woman needs someone warm to hold. I feel the rain running down my face. I find it no matter what it takes. Smoky Mountain Rain, keeps on calling her name.
never mean it no harm. Be told you never saw them in trouble with the law since the day they were born.
The Shooting Bench is making some major changes. Starting the 1st of August, the Shooting Bench is only going to be on 3 days a week. 3 days? Well, not to worry. I'm going to take a couple of days off and you get an extra hour of listening time. Catch the Shooting Bench now at its regular time on Monday and Wednesday, but for 2 hours. The second hour on Wednesday will be all gun talk, outdoor stuff. Your extra hour comes in on Friday, where we start at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 Eastern, and run for 3 hours. An hour to catch up on news and current events, and Liberty Lounge at its regular time. Join me for the Shooting Bench right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
I'm a good old boy. You know my mama loved me. But you don't understand. They keep on showing my hands and not my face on TV.
Remember me? This is Amy. If you haven't noticed, I've taken a short hiatus from my show. I'll be back on a steady schedule in the early fall, though. As for now, I'll be on Monday evenings only at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. I won't forget about you, so please don't forget about me.
Where you going? Don't forget, turn back around. Help the next one in line. Always stay humble and kind.
Welcome back to the Shooting Bench.
Well, you didn't get dressed up for nothing.
All right, we're back, and I've got to make a phone call here real quick. I didn't want to do it during the break, but you guys should have probably had plenty of time to watch those two videos, and we're going to explain that, and I see Doc in the chat room there, so this ought to be a pretty painless transition. Let me make this phone call real quick, and we'll drag Doc in here with us, if we can get everything to work right here. Come on. Giddy up. All right. Now we're cooking with gas. Doc's down in Mississippi,
evening,
for those of you not familiar with him. Hello, Doc. How are you this evening?
I am well, sir. And yourself?
Doing okay. It's kind of late evening in your neck of the woods, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just past 11 here.
Well, I'm glad you stayed up to hang out with us this evening. And I'm glad you brought up this this topic. It was interesting to me that you did, because this is something that we went over in depth, not on the show. This is back before I even started doing the show, but it's an interesting topic. And what we're going to talk about a little bit is some different defense, disarming techniques, handgun disarming techniques, handgun and knife, either one, actually.
Well, Cope, I think the audience should know, at least I found it very interesting, that when you and I first discussed doing this topic tonight, we hadn't discussed it beforehand, and yet both you and I do it slightly different than the video, and our methods were identical to each other.
Yep.
It wasn't pre-planned, but, you know, it was just one of those synchronicity things. We both had the same approach.
And we don't want to tell everybody that our... Where'd all this noise come from here?
Okay. Tink said I'm a little low on volume. I'm trying to bring it up. But I think that's about where...
Sounds where good I'm to me. At. I don't know how everybody else is, but it sounds good on my end. But anyway, there's some... not necessarily... Yeah, it's a disarming technique, both disarming and engagement. So, Doc, you want to go ahead and start this off and show them your technique there?
Sure. What I'd like everyone to do, earlier in the show, I asked you to get pencils or pens or anything round that you can roll across your body. So I'm going to approach this as though everyone was right-handed. If you're left-handed, just do what I'm describing with your left hand, and it will work out fine. I want you to put your right hand, your strong hand, palm down on the desk or table in front of you and roll that pen up and down along your forearm and see if you feel anything. Then after you do that, I want you to turn your hand over, palm up, and roll that pencil or pen up and down along the bottom of your forearm and see if you feel anything.
Okay, you're going to need to go all the way to the heel of your hand when you do this from the bottom. You need to go all the way down to your hand.
I'm going to cut to the chase now, and I'm going to assume that nobody felt anything especially odd. And by all means, give me feedback in chat. Okay, now after you've done that, I want you to turn your hand upward. Turn your hand vertically with your thumb up. And roll that pencil along the top ridge of your forearm. And as you do that, you should notice what almost feels like an electric shock along that bone. That bone is called the radius. And there are nerves that run across the top of that bone. So unlike rolling that pen or that pencil across the top of your arm or the bottom of your forearm, when you roll it across the top edge of that forearm, the upper edge, you should feel some obvious nerve sensations. Okay, now, still holding your thumb and your hand in an upward position with the thumb pointed up, look at the area where your hand meets that radius bone, right at the wrist. And what you'll notice at the end of the radius bone, there's a little knob there, a little hard spot. Now I want you to take your pen or your pencil and roll it over that hard spot. Roll it kind of hard and see what sort of a sensation you feel. You should notice that it hurts, and the harder you rub against that area, the more it's going to hurt. Anatomically, that's called the process of the radius, that little area right there where that little knob is. And I hope everybody can hear me okay. I keep having to fool with my volume. It won't stay put for some reason.
Yeah, it's bouncing in and out for some reason. You come in real loud, then it fades out right away. But I think everybody can hear you okay.
Okay. Now, if everyone has done that, you feel how painful that little area is on the inside of your wrist, right there at that little bump. At the process of the radius is what that area is known as. And a lot of nerves congregate at that little bump. So let's go back to the Tom Cruise video. And Cope, feel free to jump in anytime.
All right.
And we're going to critique his technique, which was very good. I know from the research I've done that Tom Cruise trained extensively to do that movie. But in my opinion and Cope's opinion, they didn't get a few things quite right, and this is one of them. In the movie, as Tom Cruise approaches the tweaker who has a gun to his head, you'll notice that he used his weak arm to sweep the bad guy's pistol away. There's two things wrong with that. One, it causes your adversary's weapon's muzzle to sweep across your chest. The other thing that's wrong with it is if you merely hit the back of the wrist or the back of the hand, it does not create much pain. You can verify that for yourself with your pen or your pencil. Roll it across the back of your hand and the back of that wrist. And you'll notice it really doesn't hurt very much. There are hardly any nerves in that area. Give me some feedback in chat, guys. Are you getting this?
You know, as he knocks that away with the weak hand, not only does it go across your body, there's nothing at all. You're banking on luck, or you're banking on the fact that he's got it on safety, that he won't, out of reflex, pull the trigger when it goes across your body.
Correct. Now, here's the way Cope and I learned that technique, and this is how he teaches it, and I teach it occasionally. I'm not an instructor like Cope is, but I have taught a few people how to do this. Instead of sweeping the pistol with your weak hand, you sweep the pistol with your strong hand, and you come down very hard in what the layman would describe as a karate chop on that wrist, and you try to aim for that process of the radius spot. Now, that's going to accomplish several things simultaneously. If you hit that spot, the process area, you paralyze the hand. The adversary is not even going to be able to get a reflex shot off.
And you get a free gun.
If you do it hard enough, you will probably break the wrist. And you are sweeping the muzzle of your adversary's weapon away from you, not in front of you. Now, let's say you miss and you don't hit the process of the radius area directly. Do you remember earlier in the show I had everyone roll that pencil up and down the top of their forearm? And there's a reason for that. Because if you miss and you still hit the top of that radius bone, you're going to nail some nerves. It won't be as effective as hitting the process, but it will still be effective, much more so than hitting the back of the hand or the back of the arm. Cope?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, go ahead and add something to that.
No, I was thinking about this as you're doing it. You know, there's depending on the situation, there's three ways to do it, but we'll get into that. Why don't you go ahead and finish what you're doing with that one, and then we'll talk about a couple of other ways, depending on how they're standing and all of that. But go ahead and finish yours.
Now, a couple of other things you may have noticed in the video, maybe you didn't. It's kind of subtle, but Tom Cruise swivels his strong hip as he does that move. Now, the way I've always been taught is to carry a magazine or some extra weight in that strong side jacket pocket. And when you swivel that hip, when your strong hand comes down after you've struck the weapon, bring it down using your thumb as a hook to hook the bottom of your jacket and sling it open as you swivel your hip. Come down, slap your butt, and come up with your pistol. And in chat, I see Peanut says, okay, he remembered I demonstrated that technique when he was at my house, and I think we did.
Yeah, we do it a little bit differently on clearing the jacket. Instead of hooking the thumb under it, and I know a lot of people do that, and I used to argue back and forth with some FBI guys in New Mexico all the time on this. But as we do it, we reach down and make a hook out of your hand. You grab the jacket as if you were taking it off. And instead of just pushing it out of the way just enough to grab the pistol, you throw it where basically the corner of the jacket will go all the way up. And I'd like to try to have it hit me between the shoulder blades as I throw it up out of there quickly. It's very fast, and it seems to be, depending on the weight of your jacket, a little more positive than just hooking your thumb in it and pushing it out of the way. But it is.
I wouldn't argue that point for a moment, Cope. Yeah, I think either way is perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the weight of your garment and obviously how you train, you know, to do that.
And having a spare mag in your lower jacket pocket or your coat pocket, as well as swiveling that hip, you've already set up the forces of inertia to make that jacket fly back and clear your pistol.
Yep. On a concealment garment, especially on a light shirt, if you've got a square-tailed shirt that you're wearing for concealment, you can take a stainless steel or a brass washer, about a 9/16 flat washer, and sew it into the bottom of the seam right in the corner. Do it on both sides so it hangs evenly, and that's enough weight for you to grab that and throw it out of the way on a light garment like that.
Now, Long Slide said, so use the strong arm karate chop downward, then draw. And yes, that's basically what you do. Larry Vickers brought up a very valid point in the second video. And this, in my opinion, mitigates against using the weak hand to do the weapon sweep. And that is that it is entirely possible to shoot your weak hand in the adrenaline rush and the instantaneous reaction in a combat situation. So that's another safety aspect of using your strong hand.
Yeah, and that's one of the things you can ask. Long Slide and Yakima Glock both have taken a class from me, and we did stuff like that, and it is imperative that you jerk that hand back or make your shots to the pelvis instead of up to the thoracic cavity area. If your hand is trapped or you've got it out there, you can go ahead and draw and shoot, but you shoot low and get away from that hand.
And I discussed this with Cope before the show, and one thing we want to emphasize is that you can't learn this or any other technique by listening to us and watching a video. You've got to train and train and train, and preferably almost to the exclusion of any other way, do it with a good trainer.
Yeah, we'll have to. How do they say it on TV? Don't try this at home. Yeah, don't just watch a video or listen to a radio show and think that you're a gunfighter all of a sudden, because it is potentially very hazardous to do some of these things without someone to supervise or critique what you're doing.
And if you may recall earlier, I said in the real world, if you do it at full speed and full power, there's every possibility that you'll break that wrist. So, you know, I was very fortunate that I had a national karate champion who was one of my instructors when they first started teaching this. And he had such a well-developed touch, he could quite literally carefully measure the degree of pain he was going to inflict on the student. And, really, that's what it came down to.
Yeah.
And I don't claim to have nearly that finesse.
But there's...
When I've taught people this, I tell them what I'm going to do in advance, and I basically just tap them. And even just tapping them is often enough to get them to drop the pistol, even though they know it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to do this, the best way to do it is with a blue gun. Practice with a blue gun or with a squirt pistol or something like that for a while until you get it down. The results are going to be the same. It's just that you don't drop an expensive gun on the ground. You don't take a chance of hurting anybody. Blue guns are great training aids.
Now, Longslide asked, where is the support hand during the procedure? Support hand should be out of the way. I know some guys talk about putting the support hand on their chest. I never bothered with that. I get my support hand ready to grasp the fingers of my strong hand. That's the only time that support hand should come up. Like I said earlier, if it comes up at any other time, you risk having your hand get shot.
Right. Yeah.
Now, Cope, you wanted to address some variations of that technique?
Yeah, it's the way that they're doing it is not necessarily wrong. Doc and I feel like the way that we do it is probably a little bit safer, but there are, you know, there's times that you may need to do that. And one of the things that I would like to see people do when they practice this is if for some reason, because of a physical barrier or another person intervening or weakness in your arms or something like that, if you have to do it the way that he shows you to do it, it is absolutely imperative that you turn your body clockwise as you sweep that gun so that you reduce the distance that it's going across your body when you push it. Don't just stand there square and push it out of the way and have the gun cover the whole your whole body as it sweeps across. You can turn quickly as you do that and reduce your profile. Does that make sense to you? Is that the way I'm explaining that? Does it make sense how you would do that?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And I mean, I should have added that when you swivel your hip to throw your jacket back, you're basically blading your body towards the adversary.
Kind of giving yourself a little bit narrower of a target there. The width of the target is not as important as it is that you're just moving out of the way. It's not the fact that you're making your body half the size. It's the fact that you're taking that half and moving it from where it was. The key thing about a gunfight, above all other things, is don't get shot. Whatever it takes to accomplish that, that's what you need to do. So if you have to push that gun away with your weak hand across your body, blade your body so that there's nothing there as you push it. And it's not a bad way, because it does throw him tremendously off balance when you slap that arm around there real hard, and nothing then is any danger to you. He has to recover and come back. By that time, you should be able to draw and light him up without any problem. The other way to do it is, if you must, is to take your support hand, your left hand, for ease of description here, take your support hand, your left hand, and come from the inside and sweep that gun out and turn the same way. You're going to hit in the same place that we were talking about doing it with your strong hand. You can do the exact same thing. You're just not going to be able to put as much power into it. But you can still sweep that gun out of the way. The problem with that is that his left hand now is wide open. You're actually spinning him in the direction that can bring his left hand around and make contact with you. So if you're going to do that, as you push it away, you need to put your left foot back as you sweep that and take a step back as you draw, because you're going to be spinning him around where he can slap you with that left hand. So when you guys try this with a blue gun or your finger gun or whatever, always, you know, you can try different ways to do this and see how each one of them works, because each one of them can be used in different situations. And I do want to warn you about one more thing. Keep your fingers out of the trigger guard, even if you're using a blue gun, because there are certain things that you can do there. You will snap that finger in the second knuckle.
So I think the bottom line here is that neither Cope or I am saying that the method you saw Tom Cruise employ and that Larry Vickers repeated and critiqued is bad. We just think in most cases ours is better for two primary reasons. What I'll call the Tom Cruise method ignores the nerve centers of the body. So yes, if you use your weak hand and smack the back of his wrist, it'll probably work. But you lose all the advantages of hitting that nerve center and paralyzing the hand. And the other problem, of course, is the Tom Cruise method has you sweeping the adversary's muzzle across your body.
Yep.
The way Cope and I are recommending that you do it forces the weapon away from your body.
And there is a, if you don't have a gun or if you're just taking, you do this exact same thing. And you can take that support hand up and hit the wrist. I'm sorry, your strong, your right hand, your strong side, and hit that wrist, and he will relax his grip instantaneously and give you that gun. If you you bring it up, bring your support hand up, take the gun, take your firing side, your right hand, and hit in that same place and take the gun away from him. It's fast, it's easy, and there's a number of ways to take the gun away, quite a number of ways, but that's just one of them.
And if you successfully hit that little knob, the, what they call the process of the radius, you shut down the nervous system in the hand so that even if, God forbid, he retains the weapon, he cannot pull the trigger for a matter of seconds. It's like Novocaine winding up in the hand, except it hurts a lot more.
Yeah, be careful practicing this. The thing that everybody, when they practice something like this, almost everybody immediately wants to prove how fast and how cool they are. And I think that these people don't take it seriously enough from the onset. They're do everything, you know, one quarter speed as you initially do this. And do it that way a few times, nice and smooth, gently, because if you try to get stupid with it and try to hit somebody, you're going to hurt somebody. You can hurt them pretty badly this way.
Are you still there, Cope? It sounded like you were dropping out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if,
oh, okay.
I can't hear what you're hearing, so I don't know if I was or not.
But another thing, like I said earlier, and I'm going to stress this probably to the point of boredom, but you cannot watch that video and listen to Cope and I and think you're going to go out on the street tomorrow and use that technique. If you're very lucky, maybe you will, but I have literally done hundreds, if not thousands, probably thousands of repetitions of that technique. And just like using your pistol, there's a lot of muscle memory involved to get really good, really accurate, and really smooth with it. And once you're good, once you've invested the time in training and doing those repetitions, it is just slick as goose you know what. I mean, you can disarm the guy in the blink of an eye, and they never know what hit them.
That's a fact. It does. It's very fast, very, very safe on your side as long as you do it right. Practice, like I said, practice with a blue gun over and over and over and over before you have to. There's nothing on a blue gun, there's nothing on a real gun that makes this any more effective or any easier or harder. There are some techniques where you actually need a functioning gun to do it, but on these several, and then the variations of it, you don't. Anything with a squirt gun will work.
Now, earlier in chat, Molly made the observation that if the other bad guy in the clip had his weapon already drawn, that the situation would be different. And I agree. If both of them had their weapons drawn, the situation would be radically different. So a very important aspect of this is to understand that just because you know a technique confers no responsibility on you to use it. You know, a lot of guys who are kind of newbies in the field are just looking for an excuse to use their gun or looking for an excuse to take somebody out or try a new technique. And there are an awful lot of times when to use the old phrase, discretion is the better part of valor. You don't have to get into a gunfight every time somebody displays a weapon.
Right.
You know, this is very much a judgment call. But there are a lot of times, if not most of the time, when it may be best to find a more tactically beneficial area or stance or location for you to engage the enemy. And I can't tell you when and how to make those assessments. I mean, there's a whole science devoted to this. It involves body language, reading people's eyes, and that's too much in depth to get into in the brief confines of this show. But take this away. Just because you know how to do it, don't automatically believe that you have to do it. There are a lot of other things to keep in mind. And generally, I would say, don't play heroics. Don't try to disarm a gunman unless you really believe the alternative is getting shot.
And sometimes you can tell, you know, depending on how they handle it. If you know your guns well, you can tell if the gun is even... Take a revolver, for instance. You can look in the cylinder and see if it's even loaded. Sometimes they, you know, people use toy guns. They use unloaded guns. They try to bluff. People freak out when guns are pointed at them and don't pay any attention to some of the details on that. You can kind of get an idea of his demeanor, you know, how bad he's sweating and messing up his words and everything else. He may be probably just as scared as you are, except he's got the gun. And unless you really believe that he's going to pull that trigger, then trying to disarm somebody is really a pretty stupid idea. It's like clearing rooms. You clear rooms when you don't have a choice, when you don't have law enforcement to back you up. If you're going to do it, you need to do it right, because that is a very, very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, well, that's a pet peeve of mine. I experienced this in Africa. My son told me he experienced it all the time in Iraq, and that's this whole room clearing business. You know, my attitude is very different than the contemporary modus operandi of most police and military. If you're so certain that there are terrorists in a building or in a crawl, I see no point in doing any house clearing. Just bring up the 60 millimeter mortars or the RPGs and take them out from 100, 200, 300, 500 yards away.
Yeah, or throw a grenade through the window and clear it that way or something. But in the home, if you're upstairs and you have kids downstairs and you hear a noise or something, you know, glass breaking, alarm goes off, you have to. You cannot call 911 and have them get there in any reasonable amount of time.
No, sure. In that case, obviously, that's a very different scenario.
But if you're going to do it, you absolutely have got to do it correctly. It's an extremely dangerous thing to do. As a matter of fact, I wish that Tampico Scout was in the chat room. He did a lot of this stuff in Iraq. And when he took the class from me, I think he was just humoring me because he's done it, you know, so many times. But I showed him some ways, you know, the way that we do it. And he allowed, matter of fact, I've got it on in a written statement, that it was safer and more efficient to do it the way that I do it than the way that he was trained to do it. And, you know, I push that pretty hard in these classes because I know that there's, even if you're outside, it's not a matter of clearing rooms. What if it's just a matter of walking around the corner? You know, if you don't clear that corner properly, you're giving yourself up there.
Now, in chat, Cope, we had a good question. This is from Long Slide. He said he carries at work, but he has yet to come up with an efficient draw, and he wanted any tips on a very deep concealed carry. And from my perspective, Long Slide, that is a problem. I mean, I'm in the deep south on the Gulf Coast. We have many, many days where it's usually well over 90 degrees Fahrenheit and well over 90% humidity. And it's just impractical to have a covering garment over your carry gun. So my preferred method, which is somewhat inefficient, it has a lot of shortcomings, but it's what I do on a daily basis. It's really one of the only practical ways to do it. I carry a pocket pistol in my front right pocket. And yes, it is slow to draw, but it provides adequate concealment. There's no way I can carry a weapon on my belt in the summer wearing only a t-shirt tucked into my pants and have it concealed.
I'll tell you how I do it, long slide, and I did this for 6 consecutive years when I was working in Atlanta, and hot and muggy and humid all the time. When I have to carry deep concealment, I know you guys are gonna drop your jaw on the table in dismay here. But I give up my Glock. When it comes to very deep concealment, I carry a 5-shot 38, and I carry it appendix style. And I tuck my shirt in. My shirt's tucked in. I'd look just like I'd normally do any other time. But I'll take that 2-inch 38 with a bob hammer, and I drop it in. I go ahead and get dressed and button my shirt up and everything, and then drop the gun in from the top. And as a matter of fact, I think I showed you this in the class. I thought I did. And put it in my belt, appendix carry. I'm very comfortable with a hammerless 38 outside of a holster. I mean, without a holster. If that bothers you, then unload the first chamber in the direction that your cylinder spins, and they'll have nothing to worry about. I'm comfortable with doing it. I did it for a long, long time. I worked in construction. I got on and off tractors, climbed beams, got down in holes, crawl spaces. I chased a guy in Atlanta one time for an hour and a half, you know, that was doing bad things. And I've never lost the gun. It's never moved. I never had any trouble, and it is absolutely invisible. I've talked to people for hours on end for years, and no one's ever spotted it. It works really, really well.
I have 2 handguns that I usually use for pocket carry. One is a Smith & Wesson Snub-Nose 357, a little 5-shot J-frame. It's a bodyguard. It has the shrouded hammer. And the other is a little Russian Makarov that I've dehorned. And for those folks who don't know what dehorning is, that means taking a file and filing down any sharp protrusions on the rear of the weapon that can snag your clothes. With both of those weapons, I don't and have never had any trouble getting it out of my pocket very quickly, but it is not as quick as having a dedicated holster on your belt.
Right. And the in order to, if you decide to try this long slide, The presentation technique, the draw, is to come out, your shirt tail's tucked in. You also want to make sure you have smooth wood or hard plastic grips on the gun, because if it's the soft rubber, when you go to pull your shirt tail out, the gun will probably come with it. With
correct.
Wood or smooth plastic, it will not. It stays in place. So you just grab your shirt tail with your support hand, yank it out, grab your gun, and I can do that pretty, I think, probably as fast as I can right out of an open belt holster. It's very quick, and the Glock 43 would work. You would need a slightly angled appendix style holster, and they have what they call tuckable holsters. Look into tuckable holsters. Blade Tech makes them. CompTac makes them. And I don't use a holster at all. I would if I carried a Glock. I would either carry it in a holster or I would carry it with an empty chamber. But with the Taurus 85 revolver, I don't worry about it. I haven't had any problem with it.
Just as a side note, and Cope, you and I haven't discussed this, I'd be interested in your take on what I'm about to share. A lot of people who carry 357 snubbies believe in carrying standard 38 or 38 plus P loads, and I don't. It's a 357 by God, and I run full house 357s in that little J frame. I don't suggest that you use that for casual shooting, but I don't carry that revolver for casual shooting. It is a quality revolver. It is not going to explode because you've got hot 357s in it. Now, if you feed it a steady diet, it will probably loosen the gun prematurely. But, you know, virtually any time I'm going to pull the trigger on that little J-frame, it's going to be a life or death situation, and I do not worry about the weapon exploding. Does it have a lot of recoil? Oh, mama, yes, it does. But when the adrenaline rush hits, you're not going to notice the recoil. You'll probably replay it in slow motion. Another thing that I will do with a 357 or a 38 snub nose, and I've heard people say, don't do this, it's dangerous, the gun will blow up. But that's contact shooting. We're talking about very close quarter battle when you're literally in contact with your adversary. I'll put the muzzle right up to the body and pull the trigger.
Sure.
So in addition to whatever damage the bullet does, you've got that little 357 J-frame with this huge muzzle blast. And with any weapon, you should consider all parts of the weapon to be able to be utilized. So with that 357, I'm fully aware that it's got a horrendous muzzle blast and generates a lot of gas. Well, I'm not afraid of that. I look at that as a feature of the weapon that should be intelligently applied rather than something to be minimized. Now, I don't believe in contact shooting with an automatic because there's too much chance of a malfunction. But with a revolver, you're good to go. And the guys who say, oh, it's going to explode, you'll get dangerous chamber pressures, I think that might be theoretically possible. But in training, we tried it. We did it firsthand against ballistic gelatin. Nothing exploded. You didn't have any primers flowing. You didn't have any signs of unsafe pressure. So in my view, it works. And again, I'm not suggesting you do this for casual shooting. We're talking about life and death situations.
Yeah, I don't. I can't see, especially in a revolver, how there would be any higher pressure. If it was any higher at all, it would be just a few pounds because you've still got the barrel cylinder gap there. So I don't think that that's a valid concern. I think there are guys just scared to try.
No, I agree, Cope. But you get the internet commandos who, you know, come up with a reason, or bogus or not to do something or to do something, and you know, more often than not, it's hogwash.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't, what we've done with semi-automatics, and this is something, if you push the gun up against the body, it's going to take it out of battery and it's probably going to misfire. So
correct.
What we do, and it can hurt your hand, especially if you have a 1911 or anything with an exposed hammer, is as you jam that up there, if you can, you can run your heel of your hand up against the back of the slide and go ahead and pull the trigger. But then you have to immediately clear that type 1 malfunction. It's going to fire and it'll do fine, but the next one won't because you held your hand up against the back of it. The only time you would do that is if you didn't have any other option. But you would have to immediately clear that empty brass before you could fire again. That's where the revolver really shines in a technique like that. It's much, much more effective.
Now, you know, when Cope and I have these conversations, it's interesting. Despite all our prattle about 1911s versus Glocks, listeners would be amazed at how much we actually agree on. And one of the fun things about talking with Cope is every once in a while he'll drop a tidbit or two that I didn't know, and correspondingly, every once in a while, I'll drop a tidbit or two that he didn't know. So, Cope, if you don't mind, I was going to share one of those disarmament techniques that you said you were unfamiliar with.
Please.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
This is really cool, and it works a treat. Again, this is in a grappling situation where you're in close contact with an adversary, and you are trying to get the pistol away from them. This works best if you're confronted with a double-action revolver, but it will work with an automatic. And I'll explain some of the differences a little later on and take some questions if anybody has any. If you are grappling with an adversary who has a double-action automatic, now this is grappling, this is not from a distance, the best way to disable that weapon is to place your hand over the frame and grab the cylinder. If the weapon is not cocked and you immobilize that cylinder with your weak hand, or your strong hand for that matter, there's the mechanical advantage is on your side. There's no one strong enough to pull that trigger to turn the cylinder, cock the hammer, and fire. Okay?
Right.
So there you've immediately immobilized the weapon. And the adversary is going to be so surprised, he's going to be trying to jerk it away from you so that he can shoot. At first, he won't know why he can't shoot. He won't realize what's happening. Now, there's a part two to this. As you put your hand over the revolver frame and immobilize the cylinder, with your fingertips, you press the shooter's index finger into the trigger guard so that he cannot remove the finger from the trigger guard. Then, I'm doing this from a right-handed perspective. If you're left-handed, just reverse everything I'm saying. So you've got your left hand over the shooter's pistol or revolver. You've immobilized the cylinder, and you're applying pressure to his index finger so that he can't remove it from the trigger guard. Then come up from the bottom of the weapon. With your fingers, grasp the bottom of your strong hand, which is immobilizing the weapon, and with your thumb, press the shooter's index finger against the trigger guard. So in other words, the back of his index finger will be against that trigger guard. Basically, what you're doing is getting the base of the nail or the cuticle against the hard steel or polymer of that trigger guard. And there is not a soul on earth who can withstand that pain. And what they will do, I've done this 100 times, if not more, it works every time. Again, even when they know it's coming, I've yet to meet anyone who could successfully resist this. You press the thumb against that index finger, bending it backwards so the nail is pressing against that trigger guard. They will release the pistol, and it comes right into your hand. You've disarmed them, and now you've got their gun.
Happy ending to the story there.
Peanut Rider's in the room. I think I showed that to him when he was here.
Yeah, it looks like it. He said he'll let go of it in a hurry. So, yeah, I think that's I've tried that a few times since you and I talked the other day, and I've always known to disable the cylinder that way, but the deal with the trigger finger, that's a neat trick. I like that a lot. That's
Did it work well for you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you get against that cuticle, I tell you what, you don't have to push very damn hard. It hurts bad.
And interestingly enough, that also works with any long gun, a rifle or a shotgun. And the secret there is you step inside the radius of the muzzle and do the same thing. Get control of that index finger and bend it back hard against the trigger guard.
And all it takes is for them to have their finger in the trigger guard. That's if it's there, then it's yours. Works great.
And interestingly enough, the reaction of your adversary will be to keep that finger in the trigger guard. It's a natural human reaction. They don't want to lose control of the weapon. And it almost seems instinctive that the more they fight with it, the more they'll have that finger deeper into the trigger guard.
Yep. Molly, your question about cold weather with several layers of clothes and a thick jacket zipped up. That's kind of a dangerous thing. It depends on how cold it is and what you're doing. If you have it on a hip holster, I recommend people that if you can, don't wear any more than waist length jackets, so that you can what you do when you need to clear that jacket is you reach down with both hands and pull that jacket up, hold it there with your support hand, and then draw. You can do that and fire two shots in a second and a half real easy with a little bit of practice. If you're wearing longer coats, you've got only two choices, and that is to leave it unzipped or have it where it unzips from the bottom, and you've got the top half of it zipped up and the bottom half is unzipped, and you clear it the same way you would as it as we saw in the video clip a while ago. But you have to dress around your gun. If you're going to carry a gun, you have to dress around it. And that's why I tell people if you're, I wear the same thing all the time. I wear, the 5'11 shirts, and I have certain things that I do. I do not deviate from that ever. If I'm wearing concealed, then it's inside the pants in the same position it would be if it was on the belt. If I was going deep concealment, as I said a while ago, I would do the the 2-inch revolver appendix carry. But, you know, I find the need to go deep concealed like that about once every 2 or 3 years. It's not anything that I do normally. So,
and another thing, in the modern world, you should take note of the fact that in the summer, even when it's humid and hot, there have been many occasions, years, when my job responsibilities required me to wear at least a sport jacket and a tie. So obviously in the hottest months of the summer, especially when it's humid, you wear a very light sport jacket. But again, in the modern world, you tend to go from an air-conditioned vehicle into an air-conditioned office building. So the discomfort factor is really not extreme in the summer. If you're working outdoors, if you're in a situation where your vehicle doesn't have air conditioning, or you're on a motorcycle, or you're doing gardening or farm work or construction work, you can't do that. And that, like I said earlier, that's when I have to opt for the front pants pocket carry.
Right.
Because even a T-shirt is too hot.
Yep, I agree. And you have to figure out how you're going to carry. Whatever you do, you have to practice a few times. If you're going to change from one position to another, you know, daily, let's say you're going out to dinner in a suit coat and everything, and you've got it one way. If you're going to change that in the morning because you're working outside, then I recommend that you practice that presentation a few times so that you break that habit from the way you were carrying it yesterday. Don't just swap and expect to be able to do it flawlessly without, you know, a little bit of practice.
And I agree with Cope about adjusting your wardrobe for your weapon. A pet peeve of mine is people who carry those little North American Arms 22s, those little micro revolvers, and people who carry silly guns like little 25 automatic, you know, tiny subcap compact or boot pistols. There's no need to do that. There are plenty of capable guns that will fit in a man's front pocket. I mentioned the two that I use, but there are tons more. And in recent years, the market has catered to that. So there are a lot of very capable subcompact pistols that you can carry in a front pocket.
Right. Yep. And that dehorning that he was talking about, Doc was talking about a while ago. If it's a working gun, you can take it down to a gunsmith and spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to have him dehorn it and make it look pretty. But in reality, if it's a working gun, go get you a bottle of Cold Blue. Or if it's a stainless gun, don't worry about it. And you can file it off yourself and make it look decent. It's a tool. You know, it's not... if you want something to look at, then just cut a picture out of a magazine and hang it up on the wall. But if it's a tool, you can take a file and file it off, make it smooth, put a little Cold Blue on it, and make it functional without spending $600 or $800 to have that done.
Exactly. If the gun's so pretty that you're afraid for its cosmetics, you really shouldn't be carrying it.
Right.
You know, I have certain firearms that I consider investments. That, you know, I may fire rarely from time to time, but I don't carry them because the cosmetics would be adversely affected. My working guns, to use Cope's term, I don't really care too much about the cosmetics. I expect them to get dinged up a little bit. I expect the bluing to wear off. That's just kind of the price you pay for having a working tool.
It's the nature of the beast.
And, Yak's a dehorning, if I'm not mistaken. It's also called a melt job. Yeah, I've heard people refer to it as that. And, you know, some people go to great extremes with it. I don't find that you have to go to great extremes. You just have to get the sharp edges off that are likely to hang up on fabric. On this little Makarov, I've got one of the commercial versions that has the adjustable rear sight, which I don't prefer, actually. The military versions have standard fixed iron sights. But... the ears, the corners on that adjustable sight were, you know, very sharp when I got it, and they did tend to hang up. Well, you're talking about a Makarov. It's a $200 or $300 gun. It's not a family heirloom. And, you know, about 30 minutes with a set of jeweler's files, I had that thing slicked up and smooth so it does not hang. And really, anybody who's averagely handy can do that. You're not going to hurt anything. you're just, at worst, you're going to make it a little less than pretty. But what you lose in resale value, if anything, is probably going to be less than what it will cost you to take it to a gunsmith and have them do it professionally.
Yeah, and your working guns like that, you know, I don't really care about the resale value. I'm just not something that it's not something I'm buying with the intention of being an investment to sell and get my money back out of. So, you know, if someone thinks the way I do and they want to buy a functional gun that I've already done that to, then it's not going to affect their price on it. If I want to take and sell it to a dealer and trade it in on something else, I'm going to lose my ass. But that's not what I do. That's not why I get those guns.
Hey, Cope, Longslide has a good question that if we maybe we'll go over a few minutes, but I'd like to address it. He said, Doc, in the scenario in the clip, what is your thought on a blinding light? Well, many things here. A, in that particular scenario, I don't see any place for a light. It's just not an appropriate tool to that situation. Secondarily, people for 20-odd years now have been garbaging up their weapons by hanging accessories onto them. You have a lot of pistols coming out now with accessory rails. This is a personal thing with me. I was always taught when you're using a light in a combat situation to haul the light away from your body so you didn't make yourself a target. I don't like to hang lights on my weapons. The only time I do it is when I use infrared lights for night vision purposes, and that's only on long guns. Now, if you've got a rail and you're in love with a tack light, do it. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I subscribe to the KISS principle, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. And again, if we go back to the scenario in the movie, I can pick that apart from a tactical perspective even more. The way Tom Cruise did it, and like I said, he trained extensively to do that movie, and the way Larry Vickers critiqued it were fine. I've got no argument with them. But you remember the character that Tom Cruise was playing? He was a paid assassin. He killed people for a living. The moral equation didn't enter into it, okay? So in real life, if I was a paid assassin, and I'm not, by the way, but if I was a paid assassin and these two tweakers just stole my briefcase with, what did he have, Cope, $250,000 in it? Some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah.
I wouldn't walk up to them and put myself in a disarmament situation. I'd take the guys out at 20 meters away.
Yeah, while he's walking away with his back turned would have been the time to do it.
Exactly. Just kill him and be done with it. Of course, then you wouldn't have the movie that we all enjoyed.
Yeah, but, it did
you
make
know, if you walk into a supermarket and there's a robbery in progress, okay? I've addressed this before. If the guy's got a little Jennings 25 automatic or even a 380, I'm not going to take that threat nearly as seriously as if he's got a 12-gauge shotgun,
right?
Okay? And you remember Quigley Down Under, the words Quigley spoke towards the end of the movie? He looked at the bad guy and he said, this ain't Dodge City and you ain't Bill Hickok, right?
Right.
So you don't need to get into a gunfight at high noon with a bad guy, all right? If you're in the supermarket and the bad guy is holding up the place and, A, you decide to engage him, don't give him an advantage. Shoot him from the back. Shoot him from the side. Don't say, hey, bud, and see how fast you can draw. It's not that kind of a contest. And if you don't think that legally or morally you should be doing that, then you probably shouldn't be pulling your gun in the first place.
Right.
Does that make sense, Cope?
Makes perfect sense, yeah. In real life, if I, other than being a paid assassin, it wouldn't matter what was in that briefcase. I'm not willing to shoot somebody in the back to get my briefcase back. I'm not saying that I wouldn't challenge him if there was $250,000 in my briefcase, but I'm still not willing to shoot him in the back over it.
No, I get that, Cope. But in the movie, Tom Cruise was a paid
right,
assassin.
Exactly.
So the moral equation didn't come into it.
Right. Yeah, and I agree with that.
You know, I consider myself to be a Christian man, and I'm not a murderer. I've been shot. I've shot people before. But that's not the same as being a murderer, okay? In the Tom Cruise movie, the guy was a murderer. That's what he did for a living. He killed people. So it just didn't make any sense that he would engage in an unnecessary gunfight when he pretty much knew going in that he was going to wind up killing them anyway.
Right. Just remember that when he walked away there, he shot that guy in the head as he's when he was kind of turned and shot as he's walking away. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, right. But, you know, in the supermarket scenario, I explained, let's say you've got some bad guy, some tweaker, some crackhead, just an armed robber, irrespective of his motivations, and he's holding everybody hostage with a 12-gauge shotgun or a pistol or a revolver. It doesn't matter what the weapon is. You don't have an obligation to tell him to drop the weapon. You don't have an obligation to get his attention so that he, you know, you try to see if you can get the drop on him. If you think the people's lives are in danger, your only concern should be to efficiently and safely as possible eliminate the threat.
Right. I agree.
It's not the gunfight at the OK Corral, you know.
Yep.
Well, now I see we're a little bit past the top of the hour. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Cope?
No, I think we pretty well covered it. We might do something like this again here in the not-too-distant future. And I think it'd be a good topic. Some of this self-defense stuff, I think, would be a great thing to add occasionally. Seems to be well-received in the chat room anyway.
And, you know, in parting, I've got to say, Cope is still wrong about Glocks and 9mm and 1911's rule, but other than that, Cope and I pretty much agree on 99% of everything.
Yeah, I think we do. All right, Doc. Well, I sure appreciate you coming on with us. That was some good information there. Enjoyed that.
Hey, it's been fun, buddy. I look forward to doing it again. You have a great night.
All right, you do the same. Thank you, and good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, guys, we're running a little bit over time. That's okay. I'm going to go ahead and close it out now. Now, remember, we'll be off tomorrow. We're only on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays now. So Friday, now, I'm not sure what's going to happen Friday. I'm going to be out of town teaching a class, actually teaching three classes. So if I'm not able to, I will have my computer with me. If I'm not able to do a live show, I will make absolutely certain that we have a good archive pulled up for you. There still will be a Liberty Lounge. But I'm not sure what time we're going to get done Friday or if I will be able to do a live show. So, but there will be a show one way or another. So hang with me. I should be able to get on for you Facebookers. I should be able to get on Facebook and let everyone know probably an hour or so prior to showtime. So keep an eye on that, and we'll go from there. All right. I appreciate you all joining us, and appreciate Doc helping us out there. And we'll see you all Friday, one way or another. Good night. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No explanation, no reconciliation.